and it was like everything was brand new. Meanwhile, we're here like, we've been staying inside for this long. Like, are you guys okay? You don't have to FaceTime me every day.
Welcome to Sick Babe, the podcast from my bed to yours. Here we'll be chatting about all the things that it means to be invisibly sick or disabled or chronically ill, whatever words you choose. We'll be talking about everything from tired sex to Mary on Facebook, who thinks she knows more about your condition than you do. And we hope that it can be a juicy bedside chat for those days that you don't have loads of energy, and maybe just something to keep you company on the days that you feel all right. And if you're not sick or disabled, don't worry, you can still listen. Turns out capitalism and ableism is screwing us all over. All right, let's get into it. Hey, sick babes. So today I spoke to Janika Leah, who is an author, publisher, sickle cell activist and campaigner. And we had a really cool combo about working whilst you're sick. How do you still balance that idea of being ambitious, but also trying to listen to your body? I really hope that you enjoy this combo as much as I did. Okay, let's get into it.
Do you feel like there's a bit of a correlation as well about being sick and like being this multi-hyphenate, like doing different things?
Definitely. Because I feel like it's almost like there's a me that lives in another world who's very healthy, and she's the one that comes up with all these ideas of all the things that Jen's going to do. And then I'm just here like, how are we going to make this work? Like, but, you know, I'm always trying to. I'm always doing my best to kind of do all the things that are on my list. And it's a lot of it is helping other people as well.
Yeah.
Find that. Yeah.
Because that kind of drives a lot through your work, doesn't it? Because obviously you're an author, you've written these amazing children's books. And do you want to talk a little bit about that, like your experience of kind of why, what led you to want to write those books?
Definitely. The children's books that I've written, they are all about sickle cell, which is a condition that I live with. And for myself as a child growing up, I didn't really understand my condition. So I grew up in isolation. I was just, a lot of it was confusion. Because I didn't understand what it was, I couldn't like tell other people how I was feeling, what was going on. And once I got into my adult years, looking back, I just think, gosh, I wish I had something that would have made my childhood different. That childhood experience of growing up with a condition that was, you know, had a good, real impact on my life at the time. I wish I had something that would make it different or that would help me to understand. And then I just thought, hey, you got to be the change. So I wrote a children's book about sickle cell. So the main kind of the overall goal of the series, because there's two at the minute and I plan to do a few more, is to give children with sickle cell the confidence to speak about their condition openly and confidently, and, you know, tell their friends, this is what I've got to do to stay well, and this is what the things that I have to do when I'm, you know, missing school or sometimes when I'm off. Like, it doesn't have to be something that we shy away from. And I also think that's, you know, people having a stigma against something as well. Just, I always think that when people have a stigma against a condition, it's because they don't understand it. It's not really about you. So as long as you have that confidence, you understand what is it you're going through, life will be different. And that is just what I wanted for the books. So it was like motivated by myself, but for the children growing up today with sickle cell, just, you know.
It's just amazing. I think that's like a specific kind of experience as well, of being sick as a child as well into adulthood, and the transition of that and the acceptance of that, and like actually realizing, you know, I feel like as I've got older, I've realized the stigma that still exists around so many sickness and disability.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you think, oh, we're like forward, like we're forward thinking and we've progressed. But actually, when you really speak to parents and children and young people who are living with long-term conditions, disability justice needs to be still at our forefront of things that we fight for, because the support that is needed for mm-hmm. young people and children is still, there's still so much to go. And that thing of, like you said, like that isolation of like, oh yeah, you know what it is we'll just kind of put you aside and yeah, you'll miss out of school and you just won't get it. And like, you can't do this. And we'll wrap you up and say that probably your life is going to be like smaller and shorter and all these different things. And it's like, as though that's just what you've got to accept.
So
I think it's really amazing to see just the stuff that you're saying, like you can live your life in various different ways. And the more you know about yourself, the better you can make the choices.
100%. And I think that's also probably why, you know, in my mind, there's so many things that the things that I want to do, it's like, for me, I want to make sure that I achieve them. There doesn't have to be no time restrictions on them, but just to show that, hey, you can do this and you can do that. And it's not even about proving people wrong. It's just about proving myself right. Like proving to myself that I knew I could do this, even though you guys are like, whatever. It's for me. It's not for anyone else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the example that I'm setting by doing that is that, you know, you guys can dream big. You guys can, anything you want to do, like you don't have to feel like you have to be stopped.
This is us. Yeah. Wow. How do you balance, do you think, that thing of being like a very ambitious person and wanting to do so many things? Like you were saying before about like, there's a, in your head, sometimes there's this like Janika that lives that's kind of quote unquote healthy. And then the reality. And obviously we know like being a sick babe and stuff, it's like the idea of overcoming your sickness is not ever a reality because you're never trying to overcome it. You're trying to live with it or alongside it. But sometimes I know that we probably get, oh, I just wish, like, you know, you have, like you said, you have that image. So how do you balance those things together?
Do you know what? I have those moments. I have that, gosh, I wish I could just keep going, or I wish, you know, I wish I weren't so tired right now. I have a long list, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but ticking things off that list, whether it's been on the list for 1 year, 5 years, 7 years, that is just how I go about it. I add things to my list. Once you get on the list, it's going to be done by the grace of God, mm-hmm. by prayer, by I don't even know what, by sleep most of the time. But I just, once something gets onto my list, it's something that I know that I'm going to get to. And I very much, one thing that I don't do, and I really kind of, I practice a lot of mindfulness or meditation, I try to, is to not focus on anybody else, because I think that is the biggest distraction and the biggest setback sometimes within our own minds. We look at everyone else and, you know, everybody else probably, for one, they're probably not sick, babe. They probably don't have a chronic illness. They're probably not tired as much as I am. And it's, that can then make me feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not working hard enough. I'm not doing enough. And I am hard on myself, but at the same time, reflection is everything. So not looking at anybody else and just focusing on my own journey. Like I'm the only person in the world. And these are all the things that I've done already. So therefore I'm still going to be able to do all of these things as well.
I love that mindset. And I think that comparison piece is so important, isn't it? Because in general, they say comparison is a theft of joy.
Yes.
But I feel like as a sick babe, it's like comparison can be the theft of your health, actually.
Literally.
Or comparison can be the theft of your energy, because the fact of like us overstretching or pushing further or not listening to our body has a detrimental effect. And I think we've probably all been through phases. I know I've been through the phase of like, maybe we often say about like, you know, you go through stages of grief when you're diagnosed, or even if you're diagnosed from young, mm-hmm. when you have the reality of how it manifests in your life as an adult, there's like a new stages of grief,
yes.
I think. And then it's like, within that, in the same way that if somebody dies, or, you know, you lose a job or lots of different things, the reality of accepting that comes with those stages of grief. So the denial, the anger, you know, the frustration. And it's not a linear thing. You know, you're not going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're going back and forth between these.
Exactly.
Literally.
Yes.
And I think that denial bit makes you, I know I went through it when I was diagnosed. It was like, okay, cool. Anyway, I'm gonna carry living like yes. like I've got like I'm able-bodied and I'm la 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 and nobody can stop me.
Right.
And because I'm kind of a recovering perfectionist as well, it's the balance of embracing imperfection becomes a whole new thing when you're a sick babe. And that's also cool. The idea of you have to kind of think, so I'm embracing imperfection, which is one thing. And also I have to realize that things are not going to be done on the time scale that I want to do them. But it's like you said, you've got that dual personality. It's like part of me wants to do it like this. Then you have the reality or your body speaks to you in new ways and says, don't know how well that's going to go down. So I think it's really interesting, the whole idea of comparing yourself to others and making the difference between something that Brené Brown says, which is like perfectionism isn't necessarily like healthy striving. Like healthy striving, being an ambitious person is okay. Mm-hmm. But when you tip over into perfectionism, that's when it becomes really challenging. And I think for me as a disabled person, it's like accepting that I can still strive. I can still have ambitions. I can still want to get things done. But I think I loved what you said about, I have this list, but sometimes the things on the list will take me 10 years to do.
Yeah.
And I don't measure that.
No. And you know what? I also think this might sound completely weird, but like the life expectancy for someone that lives with sickle cell at the moment is something like 40 something, 42, 45, something like that anyway. So there's also this thing of, you know, you've got a shorter life, you got to live it like it's your last and all that. But me having something on my list and having like a long-term goal, it makes me feel like I'm not restricted to that, what they're saying to me. So it gives me that feeling like it's all right, I've got time. Whether that is the truth or not, no one actually knows anyway. Like, yeah, okay, I have this condition. You guys are predicting this, but someone completely healthy can step out of their house and not return. Do you know what I mean? Nobody knows what the future holds. So giving myself these things where it said, you know what, I might do that when I'm that age, or that's something I want to do when I'm that age. It's just giving me that, okay, I'm looking forward to getting to that age. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it just gives me that. But also what you were saying about the whole stages of, you know, going back to grief and going back to acceptance and then falling all the way back to like, you know, denial. And that is so real. I feel like every time I have a setback, it's like I have to go overcome all of those stages again. And that's also, those are things that people probably don't even realize as well. You know, some people might overcome something and then they're just good. They're good for a period of time. Whereas I've always got to be considering, oh my gosh, what about this? Oh my gosh, what about that? And
yeah,
man.
I think we love to think about like binaries, don't we? It's like, I'm sick or I'm not sick, or I'm like, I'm like in it deeply or I'm over it. And it's like, actually, in many things in life, it's always like a process and actually a kind of place that you're in rather than it's this or that. It's like, I'm probably always going to be carrying grief with me
all of the time. Exactly.
Literally.
And these can be things that throughout a day, you know, depending on what you think about or something like that, I look back at things like I did, I launched my book in 2020, just before COVID. And the debate between, am I going to cancel the launch? Or am I going to do the launch? Because I had to have surgery and I was absolutely exhausted. Am I really going to do a launch 3 weeks after having surgery? Are you mad? Like, but then still doing it and looking back at the pictures and knowing how I felt at that time compared to how I'm feeling now, I can still, like, speaking about it, I can get emotional about it. Do you know what I mean? So we can always go through these experiences. It's not even like over a period of time. It can be all in one day for us, and still just overcoming and still just being here. I find just being in the present moment and accepting how I am right here, right now, is like my new thing that's working for me. So like, okay, right now, you know, I'm feeling like shit. It's all right though, Jen. You know, you're allowed to. shut the laptop, yeah. turn off the phone.
This is it. Exactly.
It's okay. You know, I just think now I used to battle with myself about feeling like this and feeling like that. And oh no, I've got to stay positive. I've got to keep going. And now I'm just like, do you know what? I feel shit. If I'm tired, I'm tired. If I don't want to speak to no one, I just don't want to speak to no one. These are just things that it just helps me to just process and just be my normal, you know?
That's such a big thing, isn't it? Like our normal is just, even from one sick person to the other, or even one yeah. person with sickle cell to the next person with sickle cell, or, you know what I mean? It's like everybody really has to find their own pace. And I think what you said about mindfulness is funny to me, because I feel like, you know, when you first get diagnosed and they give you all them pamphlets or something, or you're like, you know, download these apps, and you're like, oh, please just be quiet. Like, mindfulness and green tea is not going to change me. But then as you get older, you're like, maybe I will pick up that book on mindfulness. And yeah. it's like, and then you come months later and like the mindfulness, the idea of it is just like, oh, please be quiet. But then, so it's even that, it's like the coping mechanisms change depending on where you're at. But I think, you know, the idea of staying here is as much as we might be like, oh, please stop doing, you know, the whole wellness industry has a kind mm-hmm. of co-opted mindfulness in a way that is sometimes a little bit toxic. But, you know, for people who were, like you said, having to think about death or think about mortality on a regular basis in a way that I think is different to those people who've never experienced sickness, because I think COVID, and I'm wanting to ask you about this, how have you felt about the reality of a lot of people talking about sickness and health and stuff in the wider thing? For me, it's been illuminating, but I'm interested in you.
I mean, for those of you listening, I rolled my eyes so hard, like, at this, because it's unbelievable. I just think the world is unbelievable. That's all, like, COVID just showed me a different side to people and society and the whole health industry and everything. And it was like everything was brand new. Meanwhile, we're here like, we've been staying inside for this long. Like, are you guys okay? You don't have to FaceTime me every day. Like, no, my mental That's health so is because I've been living this.
Literally, it's like when I was in hospital for months on end, you didn't FaceTime me every day. But now all of a sudden now it's like Zoom drinks.
Listen. And then when you don't answer, babe, just wanna check everything's fine, you know? When I was like, listen, don't even
yeah, when I actually probably maybe needed you to be aware of things.
Yeah.
That's the thing for me. I'm like, I think there's been a lot of people, chronically ill people and disabled people, who've expressed similar feelings of like, hang on a second. And weren't we having to have challenges like this? Weren't we trying to ask for things like remotely? And obviously there's that side of it. But for me, it's been the interesting to see how, on a whole, as a society, we battle with mortality. Just in the sense of course, like the reality of COVID and losing people to COVID in a way that feels so, you know, volatile and invasive and stressful. Like, it's really, you know, it's so traumatizing. And also there's a sense of, for those who are on, like, you know, other spectrums of seeing people who maybe, you know, I'm not going to go into extremes of like anti-maskers or people who are in like the COVID denier box or whatever, but even people floating in the middle of feeling like, you know, it's mind over matter or this, that, the other. And it's like, oh, you really think that you can control your body in it? Like, you really think you can control like the way that we are or when you live or die, you're thinking that is. And I know that obviously for survival, we kind of have to have an element of denial, because if you really thought about that, you know, existential dread is real. But it made me realize of like you were saying before about, you know, when you've been in pain for so long and then you're not in pain and you realize, oh, I was in pain for that long. I think it made me realize how normalized it is for, you know, for us guys who are chronically ill or disabled, and talking about like life expectancy or death or thinking about those things. It's like, for in a way, it felt like I know a lot of people talk about disability justice being one of the things that will be part of our survival, that everybody needs to adapt. It's not just disabled people, because the idea of a lot of sick people at the moment, yes, it was stressful, but in a way we've gone through a lot of grief stages, a lot of adaptations of having to live inside, a lot of reality of thinking that we are at risk and our immune systems are not, like, you know, able to take everything. So the adaptation was a kind of different, I think. I don't know if you've felt that, like.
Yeah, I did in a way. Do you know what? I honestly think, and obviously, you know, that I've spent quite a bit of time away from the UK. Like, I feel like that was good for me, because I feel like my COVID experience was just not, I'm not saying that it would have been great, because I think it was terrible for everyone, but it was very much, I think that my COVID experience was just negative in a way that I was, it just highlighted certain things to me. I was also, like, I was in hospital throughout a period of that time, in and out and in and out for a period of time as well. And even things like the NHS, the, you know, the doctors, the hospitals, how all of that worked. Yeah.
Yeah, we probably don't need
No.
Yeah, I feel like everybody, anybody who's sick listening to this is like, knows exactly what that sound means. It's just like, it's too much to even, it's like, it's like that's a new grief in and of itself, I think, the reality of how the NHS is. Yeah, you touched a little bit on like the stigmas and the experiences that we have with others when talking about our experiences of being kind of also, which is a big component of sick babies, those who are living with invisible conditions and disabilities and illnesses. And we were talking a little bit before about the experience of like tiredness and like what it means to there's tiredness is one aspect of like when you say you're tired to someone and someone says, oh yeah, I've been tired as well, and it's like, I don't really think we're talking about the same thing. But also the idea of kind of, there's a balance, isn't it, in terms of, like you said, not feeling like you want something to consume you to the point that you feel like you have no ownership over your body in any way, and ownership over how you feel and are in yourself. And then there's also the side of it where you feel like you have to own these things again, because you're like, actually, no, I am sick. Like, don't like tell me, you know, it's a weird thing of actually trying to, for me, celebrate the fact that I'm sick, or celebrate the sick babe, which is something that I feel like goes against everything that we've, our society has raised us in. And like, how do you feel about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I hear you with that one, because in one sense, I feel like, oh, you know, don't bring attention to yourself, or don't, you know, that. But then at the same time, it's like, no, it's, I'm sick and it's okay. I'm allowed to be, you know. I hear that, and I think I've learned accountability and acceptance, those two going together, because sometimes I would, you know, I would keep going and keep going, and then when it, you know, when it's just like you can't go no more and you've completely burnt out and there's nothing left, you then get into that mode of feeling sorry for yourself. Why me? Why is this happening? And so learning that, do you know what? I can't do that. Like, it's not good for me. Not so much I can't. I can if I want those consequences, but it's not good for me to do that. And being okay with that, like, I just, like, tired is my thing. That's like, put it on a t-shirt kind of thing, you know? And sometimes, like, there's people around you that say, oh, you know, if you keep saying that, that's how you're going to feel. And I'm like, no, but No, but it is how I feel. Like, this is not like a law of attraction thing. This is like I was born with it thing.
Yeah, it's like wrong hashtag babes. It's literally I was born with it hashtag.
I was born with it. Like, my oxygen levels are actually low. Like, I am
my blood cells are actually... I don't think you realize it.
you know, this is not that. So... But yeah, I think I'm in that whole stage of this is like stick a pin, as my granny would say. But do you sometimes get that people are against the whole glamorizing of this, even the name of the pod, Sick Bay Pub? There's other like disabled things where it's like, okay, I'm disabled and I'm proud, I'm chronically ill and I'm proud. And then I feel like there's the other side of people that are just like, no, like, you don't have to put disabled in the title, you can just be this and not be disabled. So it's like there's a battle between highlighting the fact that I'm doing this and I'm chronically ill, or I'm just doing this anyway, it doesn't matter that I'm chronically ill.
Yeah,
that battle. It's
really difficult, isn't it? Because sometimes I walk into a room, and if I walk into a room on first glance, nobody's going to know that I'm sick.
Right.
And sometimes I want to walk into that room and I do want to feel like, let me just daydream for a second that mm-hmm. I'm like not sick. And I'm just like, people are going to respond to me and it is what it is. And these people in this moment don't necessarily need to know. But then there's other times where I'm like, I want you to know on a political level, because I want to contribute to the conversation about sick people are all around you. Yeah. People are dealing with lots of different health conditions, disabilities, things that you literally don't know. And actually, if I can enable that, if I say that I'm sick and you realize, oh, I really didn't, you didn't, I wouldn't have suspected that at all. Yeah. It challenges in your mind that lots, you don't know what people are dealing with, so don't mm-hmm. assume. And then there's another side of it is like, actually, I do need to disclose because I have access needs that, like, I don't want you to ignore. So, but I feel like I flip between all of those three all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because I was talking to another friend the other day and they were talking about dating, actually, and they were talking about whether they wanted to put it on their dating bio that they were disabled. Mm. And they have like a physical, you know, when you meet them, you know, there are certain kind of ways that their body moves that you might not, you like pick up on the fact that they have some sort of condition. But obviously before that, do they need to disclose it? Do they want to disclose it? And it was interesting because it made me reflect on, I think it's that thing again, where it's always in flow, isn't it? It's like, I can decide today that I'm going to tell you every iota of all the experiences I've been in hospital. Yeah. Everything. And then tomorrow, actually, I can decide that I'm not going to share that part of myself with you. And I don't really want to because I'm in a different place. Maybe I'm feeling more sensitive about it. Maybe I'm still working through certain things. But I do think, I'm of the belief that if you're living with a chronic illness, if you're living with a disability and you don't want to disclose it and that's your thing, that's like your decision. At the same time, I do question when it pops up in myself, how much of that is informed by denial? How much of that is informed by shame? How much of that is informed by stigma that I've internalized? Mm-hmm. So unpicking those things, it's like, if it's genuinely like, I just don't want nobody to know my business, to be honest. You know what I mean? That's one thing. Yeah. But if it's like, oh, I feel like they're going to like judge me. I feel like I think it's a lifelong journey of like,
per situation, every situation, every kind of encounter, how it's going to be. I feel like up until the age of 25 for me, it was like, oh, this is a secret. Oh, everybody doesn't need to know. If I don't tell them, they won't know. It's reminded me of that TikTok. Who's going to know? No one's going to know. No one's going to know. And then, like, you know, I end up in hospital, or one time I was at work and ended up going into a crisis and I collapsed and everyone's like, what? So I feel like sometimes in some spaces it's important, but I also think it's down to the individual as well. I think I'm more of a sharer now. And like you said, unpicking the reasons why I may go into a space or be in a situation where I think I don't want them to know. And being in my head and being like, okay, why not? Is it because of this? Is it because of that? Is it, you know? But I really do feel like the only way, especially with sickle cell, because it's something that affects a lot, you know, majority of the Black community, and it's something that people need to be aware of in order to not kind of continue the cycle. I have it in my head that, Jen, it's important just to speak about it. Like, it doesn't matter. That's just for me and that condition. But there are times where sometimes I don't, yeah. Sometimes you know where the conversation's going to lead. And it's like, am I too tired to have this conversation? It's usually me.
Literally, haven't got the energy to deal with the potential. Oh my gosh, yeah, like a different, yeah, you know, like all these different, and yeah, sometimes you're in the mood for that, innit? You're like, okay, let me just pull out my PowerPoint presentation from my mind and tell you all the things. And other times you're like, you know what, I just want to like watch this show or like eat my piece of cake.
in peace. But the reason why I think I've gotten to that stage of always sharing is because sometimes it will then come up and I think, again, you know, people, oh my gosh, I didn't know. Oh my gosh, you never mentioned. Oh my gosh, you didn't tell me. Like, then it's also on me to have that responsibility of, you know, then you battle with should I have to, and you know, all of that stuff. So, I think in that whole sense, I'm open, but yeah, down to the individual. Sorry, we completely went off topic there.
But it's a good topic to go off into, like, honestly, like the balance between how do you, you know, language, how do you talk about yourself? How do other people talk about you? Mm-hmm. I think it's so powerful in the community. I know that I've shouted to people who are like, you know, like the chronic illness warriors hashtag. And it's like, for me, I'm like, that's not okay. That one's not for me. Do you know what I mean? That one's not for me. But then, you know, again, unpicking my kind of judgment areas of me, or the shame areas of me, like, well, but why are you bothered? If somebody else needs to use that statement for themselves to empower themselves, mm-hmm. then that's what they're using. Do you know what I mean? People will look at my, like you said, like sick babe and go, oh gosh, I wouldn't use that for me. That doesn't feel right. Yeah. And like at certain times, like I've got a lot of power from that kind of hashtag warrior area. I don't tend to like battle terminology because, you know, you can't win or lose sickness. It's just, you just, it is what it is. You know what I mean? And I think it feeds into this idea of like what you do. You can help it. You can change certain things that might lessen certain things, but also you'll never know. Sometimes you will do everything right and you'll still have a flare up. You'll still have a crisis. So exactly. I think it's important that people know that, you know, there's sensitivity around that word, but you know, all the times when you're going through, you're either advocating for yourself with healthcare systems or you are trying to like celebrate yourself. And so it feels like a battle sometimes. And so actually that language might feel appropriate for certain people at that time. But then other people find it really dehumanizing. And then some people find, you know, for me, embracing disability has been a new thing that is like before, you know, it really was seen as something like you realize how much stigma is around that word of it's seen as like you're less able or whatever it might be. Some people feel that, but then for me it was like, okay, but I feel like embracing it at this moment is political statement.
Exactly.
I need, you know, actually society has disabled me by the inaccessible ways that it is. Mm-hmm. And also I think that, like you said, the visual idea of who, what a disabled person is and who they look like can't just be as one type of idea. And especially for Black women who often it's like, you've got to be strong. You've got to hold it together.
But, oh gosh.
Do you know what I mean? So actually to be like, yeah, I am like disabled and I'm like sick and like parts of me don't really like show up. My body doesn't always show up for me in the way.
I hear that so much. I'm now at the stage where I just, do you know what? It's just a word. This is how I have to think about it. This is a word that society has used to describe someone who is like me, but like me is like, there's a whole sea of us. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of us. So like me, like you, like somebody else who has sickle cell, who probably has more, difficulties, mobility issues than me. That there's lots of different ones, but this is just the word. And again, it's just about, yeah, okay, we can fight it to say, oh, you know, I'm not disabled because I'm still able to do things, and empowerment. And I get that. I hear it so loud and clear. But at the same time, it's about, okay, if this is the word that you're going to pin on me, I'm going to then show you what this word looks like to me, yeah, and to that exactly. person and for that person. So it's not just, you know, the painting of the wheelchair in the car park, because I'm going to pull up and I'm going to step out of my car. But guess what? By the time I've taken two steps, I'm out of breath. So I'm not parking all the way over there. Do you know what I mean? And this is what I look like. So this is my disabled. This is my version of disabled. So I'm taking your word and I'm showing you what it is to me, or what I am, where I fit in that word. Sometimes we just can't fight the system. We just got to kind of, I don't know, use it against them.
It's that thing. It's like language is redefining. And even like over the last years, I found it really empowering when I've gone to places, because I've got like my little radar key for the kind of accessible toilets and stuff, because sometimes, you know, my body goes into different places often. And like when I go to the places that have the like badge on there that's like, not all disabilities are visible, I'm like, you know, I'm not normally a person who's like moved by certain things, but actually I didn't, it's that game of like, hadn't realized how much tension I was holding about a thing until I saw something that felt like, this is relieving. That if some
sigh of relief.
Yeah, it's relieving, because I did actually have an experience once where I was in a, like what came out of a disabled toilet, and this woman like literally shouted at me in front of everybody, being like, you know, you need to leave that for people who really need it. And da 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 da. And it really shook me, because I think when you are living in your body and you're like, I'm tired, I'm in pain, I'm dizzy. So if I go into one of them little cubicles, I might drop down, and there's lots of things I need. And also, one, I don't really need to justify it to anyone else. But that moment of like coming out, being like, okay, I've just had, been able to do what I need to do as a human being and not being in any kind of pain or worry. And then to step out and be like, it's like, wow, like that's really that, like, you sometimes you forget in it, do you know what I mean? You
to
forget,
just be attacked.
You forget that people can't see what you're dealing with. So having those moments that if I walked out and then people see a little badge that says not every disability is visible, it's like that really enables me to feel safe in that moment.
Yes. Also, what you're saying about sometimes you forget that they don't know, like if I'm feeling unwell, it's almost as if like I feel like everyone can, like I feel, because I feel so bad, I feel like they must know, or I just forget that actually I still look fine now, don't I? And that's crazy. I've had that, being attacked as you come out again, and you're just like, you're not even prepared.
Yeah,
it's like you wasn't even ready for the battle, and you
this is what I mean. So I feel like in those moments, it reminds me why it's important that I speak out about my experiences. Because I'm like,
exactly.
You know what? If this means that in 10 years' time, people are going to be so used to the idea of like people literally deal with so many different things that you have no idea about. Mm-hmm. And there is certain, and the health industry as well, the way that, you know, capitalism is infiltrated every areas of our life. And the fact that the ones that you hear loads about, you know, capitalism and white supremacy, the conditions that you hear loads about, it's not because those are the only ones that exist, or those are the only ones that are the most quote unquote serious.
Nope.
Look, like you said, sickle cell is a kind of, in the lack of awareness funding is largely impacted by the fact that it affects Black people. So,
exactly.
You know, why, so we can't be, and actually, even over the time of kind of meeting you and reading more about sickle cell, it's like, how has this ever been seen as though it's like something? Because when I grew up, when I was a child, it was like people would say, oh yeah, your cousin this got sickle cell, or da, 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 got sickle cell, and I just literally thought, okay, it's just like a thing, like an anemia. That's the way that it was kind of phrased, like, oh, they've got to take a couple of tablets and they'll be fine. But like now learning about like the crisis, and like you said, the life expectancy and these things, it's like, oh my gosh, like this kind of awareness has really been a victim to white supremacy and capitalism in a way that I don't think people really, really deep.
No, not at all. It's actually the most common genetic disorder in the UK and one of the most in the world, I think next to kind of like cystic fibrosis. So like sickle cell affects a lot of people, more people than any other kind of genetic condition. But again, like you said, largely underfunded, largely just not spoken about or not given the platform to share or to speak about. And then the thing is for myself, and, you know, I'm just going to say this because this is just like me and maybe the sickle cell community. I don't want you guys to be mad at me, but because I think a lot about, like I said, I don't know. I have this thing about thinking of others and things like that. So I know that where sickle cell sits, but then sometimes ranting about another condition, like somebody else's disability or somebody else's chronic illness, I'm not necessarily feeling like it deserves any less attention than sickle cell does. Do you know what I mean? So it's not about taking away from something else to say, like, you know, well, this is worse than yours. It's just about also giving us that platform and that attention to say, hey, this is just as bad, or this also deserves just as much. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's not a competition of who's worse and who's this. It's about shining the light on maybe those that need more attention or those that need it most. And I feel like politically there's not enough being done, like funding. It's sad when you look at the numbers compared to other conditions.
Yeah.
And also for me, and kind of, you know, with sickle cell largely affecting Black people, it does affect white people. Mm. But then there's that whole, sometimes I feel like, you know, on one hand, where are all the white people that have this condition? Mm. Would you speak up more? Would that make a difference? Yeah. On the other hand, we always tend to have this thing about, you know, we need a white savior, and then they come and save the day, and then all the money and all the attention flows in. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
There's so many different elements of, it's a lot.
Yeah, it just really kind of breaks my heart when I hear more about like the medical racism that we experience, and the idea of like, you know, Black people can take more pain, and obviously sickle cell largely is, well, it's not largely, but your crises are so excruciatingly painful that it's just kind of like, oh, what does that mean when you go into the hospital and try and get support? And I just think that, like you said, when you realize it's not like a competition of like, oh, we, you know, it's this against that. But I think it's really interesting to, when you unpick, hang on, why do I know so much about this and I don't know about that, or I have these ideas about that, and where did that come from, or what am I like, why am I thinking, and as somebody who is sick and experience like kind of a few different health conditions, it's really interesting experience it in like one part of the hospital, and then you go to the other part of the hospital. Is and I don't really think people really know about that political and economic side of how different aspects of health are focused on, which is it's a really kind of a new thing that I've realized as I've got older. It's like, it's not like if you're sick, we're all having an equal experience. Really, there's inequalities at even all. Within the marginalized communities.
At all, it's not. There's just no equality at all. It's the same as, I feel like sometimes we forget, or we expect that in certain industries, everybody will be treated as equals. Mm-hmm. So, okay, it may be different in the workplace, or it may be like this, but you know, the healthcare is the healthcare, and everyone has to be treated the same, and everyone has to be treated equal. But no, the inequalities in healthcare, in terms of not only, you know, patient care, but also, you know, funding, in terms of the wards and what that looks like, or how things are, just down to the minute details of like decorations and pictures, or the feel of certain things.
Oh my gosh. I'm glad so glad we finally talk about this. Sometimes you go, so what do you think? How come you guys have got so many pictures and
right positive machine and things and
this and yeah, like, and like the way that people talk to you in certain areas is very, very different to you go over to other areas. It's like, oh, there's one little plastic chair and some sticky magazines. I mean, not anymore because of COVID, but do you know what I mean? Like, thank you so much for everything that you've shared today. It's been so insightful and just beautiful reminders of things that sick babes need to hear, but everybody also, like you said, needs to remember that, like, we, you know, we're here and like try and reflect on the here and now. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I can say #sickbabe.
It's always such a joy to speak to Janika. I feel like she has such an energy of compassion and perseverance. And I just think the work that she's done for the sickle cell community is incredible and really, really important. So you can follow Janika on Instagram at justjleah. And I'll link that in the description as well. And you can find out more about her book, My Friend Jen, which is a children's book made for young people with sickle cell, which I think is incredible. So please do follow more of her work. And yeah, it was such a great time speaking to her today. Sick Babe was produced by She Wants a Dog, supported by Contact Theatre and Arts Council England. Sound designed by the amazing Eliana Evans. Follow us on Insta at SickBabePod for more information.